This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hi, I'm John Oliver, member number one. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. I'm Chris.
I'm Gordon.
And that makes me Phil.
Oh. What are you feeling then, Phil?
I'm feeling summer has arrived. I'm not loving it.
It's been here for a while.
The bitter summer has arrived.
Oh, yes. I tell you what, I went to the theatre on Friday night and drove home in an air-conditioned car, went inside, and the house was 31 degrees when I checked the thermostat inside, and it was so hot. It was awful. I had to run around and open the windows to get the bit of cool into the place before going to bed.
Well, it was a nice warm night. Yes. It's not good for sleeping.
Yes. Well, I've had no trouble sleeping, I must admit.
We pass out from heat exhaustion.
No. I just like on top of the bed with a fan going.
Most of my fans are interstate.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, the ones that wave to you when you go past.
That's right. No, they wave to make sure I go past.
Right.
Oh, thank you very much for being with us on this broadcast. Frivolity, that's the name of our little program. Well, serious topics that we sort of share, but wrap around with a little bit of comedy thrown in, courtesy usually of Phil.
Oh, yes. Phil's got one of those brains that says everything's funny.
I was going to be a comedian, but everybody laughed at the idea.
See what we mean, listener?
I can't help it.
Yeah, no, we know. Tell you something that they can't help, too, is it's actually, I'm going to deviate a little bit, but it's happening over in America with their political scene. They're having trouble with their budget, and our parliament is starting this week. And they'll all be back. One thing they don't do in Australia now is they don't block supply. After the Whitlam thing, when they blocked supply and wouldn't let it go through,
they've threatened it a couple of times.
But they can't, because the government has always been in charge, anybody that's an independent in the lower house, they will always vote with the government on supply bills, so that that can't happen in Australian politics, which is very, very good. It hasn't happened since. There's been no mention of blocking supply to anybody. So one thing about it, that's it. But then, of course, we've got all the rest of the thing that's going on up there in Canberra that's been, well, it hasn't stopped really, I suppose.
Well, you can see that they're lining up to have an election federally also, as well as a state election in November this year.
Well, the federal election doesn't have to happen till late March, I think, is as late as they can be next year.
This is the manoeuvring and it's the politics of the circumstances that we will dump on anybody that we need to dump on to make ourselves look good. That's one thing. And the other thing is to make dirty innuendo and rumour mongering.
Oh, yeah.
The rumours are coming thick and fast, and the filth, I mean, we've seen a lot of it in the year just gone in the debate on our right, but this year there's going to be much more dirt thrown around and smelly mud at that.
Well, when you don't have policies, it's very easy to sort of start throwing mud at other people. This is the problem with that.
Being critical without your own good ideas or thoughts or proposals or policies is.
You've got to have some policies that the people will want to know about, what they're going to do about climate change, what you're going to do about giving the people that are working a wage increase, because that's not happening either at the moment.
But you're asking for a government to have a policy on something that they don't believe in. Climate change isn't happening, so we can ignore it. That's a really good policy, especially when you're at the end of your career.
The facts and figures that they're dragging up to prove that this is happening.
Well, you realise that the standard of debate depends upon your vulnerability. The more vulnerable you are to lose, the more frantic you're going to be blowing your mouth off. In one way, it's an indication that some political parties in some areas are very poorly placed to maintain their position in the, as a being a viable and relevant political party.
Well, this, of course, is what happens with political parties. They come in and they gradually run out of ideas, then sort of everything starts to change, and then you get a change of government if you're lucky. But otherwise, you stay with the rest of them.
The mess we've got at the moment is because there was no debate on equal marriage because you couldn't debate in favour of discrimination. So there was no actual debate. And now we're going to hit on religious freedoms. I don't know why we need that in writing because they're as free as a bird and they don't pay tax.
I can't see any reason for this nonsense about religious freedoms because they have as much as they want.
They want permission to discriminate without getting sued. So that's saying we know who we are, we know what we think, we're not allowed to say it out loud, but protect us. Well, I'm not voting for that.
No, but you won't have to because that's what they'll get in Parliament and make that decision where they couldn't make the decision about equal marriage. So what are we paying them for half the time?
We're paying them to run surveys.
Yes, or postal votes. Yes.
Oh, no. Thank you very much. No. It's got to be a little bit better than that. It's going to be interesting to see how Philip Ruddock presents himself.
Oh, yeah.
Whether his own local personal biases comes out or whether he is able to be neutral.
No, I don't think there's going to be much. It's going to be interesting to see what they come up with because I honestly, I don't think I'd trust that thing as far as I could kick it, actually. Because they're going to come down on us, that's for sure. It'll all be about us and equal marriage, and this is what it's going to be about. Nothing else.
But why would you want to get married in a church
that didn't want you
when you know they don't want you there? I don't see the problem arising.
No. But see, there's a lot of most of the marriages these days are done by celebrants. 70% of marriages are all done out of the church and they're by celebrants in nice surroundings and all the rest of it. So
that's so God can see you better.
Is that what it is? Can't see through
the roof of the church.
Today, tomorrow is the anniversary of when insulin was first used. Insulin as a modern medicine to fix up a problem, it's part and parcel of life these days, but can you imagine when it wasn't? Phil, you're a bit of an expert on these things.
Well, not an expert. I'm a victim more than anything. But what surprised me is that it was first used in 1922, which seems it's not so long ago, but it's also a long time ago. Because they would have had to isolate insulin as the cause of diabetes. How do you reach those conclusions? I mean, I'm not a medical scientist. Sorry.
Well, this is what science is all about. And there's another thing, we don't have a science minister in the Australian government. But you know.
Was it a solution looking for a problem or was it the other way around?
Oh, very much a problem because this is type 1 diabetes, which is heredity or spread through heredity. And the extreme symptoms, you know, loss of limbs and all sorts of horrible things.
Yes.
So it's a massive problem.
Apparently the president's son had diabetes and he was almost at death's door and he decided to try out the insulin.
This first one, though, was in Canada. Yeah, it was a 14-year-old boy.
Mm.
He was in a diabetic coma. So they injected pancreatic extract, which was insulin. And it actually took the second injection to get him out of his coma. So it was obviously a life or death situation, which allowed for what you'd call pretty extensive human testing, pretty extreme testing.
Well, I think you've only got two options, haven't you? You either use it or you don't use it and the lad dies, or you use it and see what happens.
Yeah, but it would be terribly hard, though, because this is like a new concept. It's a theory. And it's not, I don't know whether it was offered as a solution or it's the only thing we can do.
Well, I think the doctor that was experimenting with it realised that the pancreas wasn't making the insulin for people that suffered from diabetes.
How can you analyse
body
secretions without high-tech equipment? I mean, this is in the period when things were still pretty rough and ready, and it's amazing that actually, yes, it did get to that particular stage.
But that's the human brain. They will work things out. We're born with this innate ability in a lot of people to do these sort of things. Some people can't do it, other people can. You get geniuses in all sorts of fields because they've got a brain that will think outside the square.
They literally see things and interpret things in ways that we would think is insane.
We would not even think, yeah. Would
like,
not
how did
think.
You reach that conclusion? Oh, it works. Well, good work.
Yeah, but it's the same with through the whole of humanity, I guess, that we have progressed all the way along the line.
It's been hot season the last few days.
Oh, you're not wrong there, Narelle.
In the middle of summer, and we've been getting some messages about people shouldn't be left in cars with the windows up and everything. And we've been talking about Philip Ruddock and the rest of all those sort of things. Let's combine the two into a little bit of a song. We'll go God Hopping.
Oh,
and the band is called Dogs Die in Hot Cars.
Well, they certainly do.
Enjoy. So
you're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9, thanks very much for being with us on this occasion.
Could you say that this show is a pearl of a show?
Well,
it's more of a pip.
Oh, now look, that's a bit sad. I've got some shirts still with mother of pearl
buttons.
Now I don't know whether people might realise that, but those buttons were actually cut out of abalone type shells, mm-hmm. where you get that shimmering. What sort of effect? Opal colorations, rainbow effect, and it's brilliant. It's lovely stuff. That interior lining of those shellfish. But sometimes when they get a little bit of indigestion, the oyster will actually put a protective covering around that piece of grit and say, right, I've put you, and we're not going to have you do that anymore. Irritate me, I'll cover you in all sorts of lovely glittery stuff, which ends up being a consolidation. Wait. And a
you
pearl.
Guys should be in sales. I'm thinking, oh, I would really like a pearl now. Give me some mucus.
Yeah, but pearls have been around. Well, in the indigenous community of Australia, pearls have been around. Pearl shell has been around for about 22,000 years. They found it on the beaches and they used it, apparently. And they had.
But I wonder, yeah, yes, and I think they've used them as decorations, as a necklace of some sort, as a main medallion hanging around the neck.
Yeah.
But that would also be a point of residence. That's where the native story or the historical story is kept. It's like the Moses Stones. That's where all the history is located.
But they've actually found pearl shell in way in the Kimberleys, hundreds of kilometres from the coastline, so that it must have been traded or done something with between the tribes of indigenous people that were in the area.
They found it on the sand in Iraq during the Gulf War.
Yeah,
it was the mother of all pearls.
It was. But they've also been right throughout history. They pearls. The Egyptians thought that the pearls were full of wisdom. They were the wisdom shell, you know. Yeah.
So that's why presumably some of the politicians would be, not politicians, the rulers of, say, India or even Great Britain would wear pearls around their neck.
Because
that would indicate their knowledge, their wisdom.
Yeah, and status as well, because they were not very cheap, of course.
We used to be the one of the major producers of pearls in the world.
Up in Broome, yeah.
We learnt fairly early on that if you, in fact, open the oyster shell up and put a little piece of grit in there, it will make a pearl for you.
Mr. Mikimoto from Japan decided to do that. That's why he became the chief architect of cultured pearls, of course, which he could do the right thing by and made lovely pearls out of being cultured. But the most valuable ones are the natural ones that they dig up out of the, or they go down diving and pull them out of the ocean. But they found the pearl shell and a lot of stuff in not far from Shark Bay in WA, which is down the coast, of course, from Broome. So they went looking for it, and that's how the Broome thing come. But the indigenous people used to trade the pearl shell with the macassans from Sulawesi, who used to visit Australia.
And, of course, they did that in the 500 years well and truly before Europeans bumped into Australia. I've seen a map that was attributed to people from way back in the 16th century, and there is an outline of that top end corner of WA around the Broome area. That the rest isn't filled in.
Yeah, see, but the Dutch found that when they were on their way to the Indonesia. Yeah. You see, that's they had mapped that area.
So there would have been exchange between those explorers or the natural inhabitants of the other islands nearby when they would have swapped cultural items.
Yeah, well, the Yolngu people from Darwin, they were great. They actually travelled around with the macassans on their boats, and they finished up going to the Philippines, to Singapore, Sulawesi. They actually settled a little bit in Sulawesi, and they had families and everything there. And there was one chap came out to Australia, one English chap was in Darwin very early on, and he found an Aboriginal that could speak English. He said, "Where did you learn to speak English?" He said, "In Singapore." He had been to Singapore.
So, isn't that brilliant?
Yeah, so it was just the fact that the Northern Territorian, they travelled a fair bit over the Timor Sea, what we now call the Timor Sea, I guess, because the Indonesians used to come here looking for
trip. But travelling south wouldn't have been much fun.
No, not much fun.
But just the amazing differences in attitudes, where the Indonesians would come and trade and not invade.
No, they didn't invade.
And then we come around to the East Coast and the English drop down and say, "Oh, like the look of this.
Yeah.
Mine.
Yeah, yeah. But they didn't like the coastline of WA either, because that was very desolate where they
Well, you came get in. Beyond the beach, there's not a lot going
Well, they,
on.
They actually went bumped into Australia because they were coming over on the Roaring Forties.
Yeah,
and then they would have to go straight up towards Indonesia. They knew that went that way to go, but then they would be blown off, and they finished up in places like Shark Bay and that northwest coast, which is very desolate. It's not good.
But
and
see, that's what they would do typically is look for an inlet or something from a river or a harbour or something.
Protection.
Yeah, but so you could consider settling there. Well, you don't see a lot of that on the west coast.
There's none of it at all, actually.
Which is why there's not many people living there even today.
Oh, yeah, there's a few people there now.
But even so, there are not very many roads. Their roads are well set back from the coastline.
Yes. They don't go too much. There are spaces where they come into the coastline, like you drive through and you come into Broome and you go into Port Hedland and all those sort of places. But our indigenous people in the Northern Territory were actually great travellers, and the Yolngu people are still there because Garimal Yunupingu used to sing his songs in that language. All his songs were sung in the Yolngu language.
Right, okay. Yeah,
it's easy for you to say.
Yes, it is very hard for me to say. But there's also several of the indigenous singers from up that way are from the same area, same clan.
Well, mob. They like to call themselves mobs.
Mobs then, all right, yeah. But so we've been trading with Indonesia well before the British even came to Australia.
Or the Dutch. The Portuguese.
Or the Dutch decided to do anything, but that was it. Yeah.
Or the Chinese.
The Chinese, they took a lot of pearl shell back. They would get the pearl shell here from the Indonesians, and they'd take it back to China.
And the bêche de mer.
Bêche de mer, sea slugs.
The sea slugs.
That's what they came.
Why have the bêche de mer got a French name?
I don't know, because
that's
what we call it now. But
yeah. Sea slugs.
If I see slugs, I go the other way.
And they But they had the Indonesians came fishing for trepang too, which is a sea cucumber.
Yes.
And they would
get very that. Misleading name that one. Mm. When you're making a salad, you don't want a sea cucumber.
Not that sort, anyway. You're with Phil, Chris, and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Let's hear someone with a little bit of finesse.
Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
You're with Chris, Phil and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Gordon, which city did you go to in China?
We were mainly in Shanghai, but we went to a couple of little country towns as well.
Is that the one with a bit of a problem with pollution?
No, Beijing was the one with the pollution, but they have cleared it up.
How did they do that?
Well, they stopped a lot of the carbon producing things that go into the atmosphere, factories and stuff. They made them close down so that it didn't throw out pollution. They banned motor cars in certain times of the day. And so they were able to decrease the pollution in the atmosphere so that now Beijing people can walk around and see blue skies.
Wow.
And they are just absolutely amazed. Some of them are still wearing the mask, but yeah, they said it's only because it's so cold that they keep the mask on their face for warmth.
Okay, now, so what about in Shanghai? Have they got blue skies?
Shanghai's pretty good, yeah. When we were there, it was in the middle of summer, and there was blue skies, and there was clouds, but there was no pollution, even though they've got lots of cars.
That you could detect from your lowly position.
Yes.
What about LA?
I'm not sure what it's like now, because they're big on legislation, but they have their inversion layers. The weather is a problem.
Please explain.
Well, it's a big valley.
Yes.
It's where everybody talks like this, valley. But you've got the hot internal temperatures from the desert. And California is essentially a desert that's been irrigated. And you've got the cold Pacific or Northern Pacific. And you get all this heated air and you pollute it with billions and billions of cars. And it gets trapped by a thermal or change in the temperature.
Oh, yeah.
So the smog, as we call it, can't get out.
Because I remember flying in to LA one time from Las Vegas, and we were going to descend into this brown soup.
Yeah. I haven't been there for quite a while, so I'm hoping that all the legislation, because they've got the toughest car modifications and they're very big on electric cars and stuff.
Well, we talked about electric cars last week, but we're a horrible race of people, aren't we? We chuck everything in the ocean.
The human race is very disposable.
It'll just out of sight, out of mind. Same, up the chimneys, into the sky. That's all right. God will take care of that. Sorry, there's only one world and we're pooing in our own nest, aren't we?
Well, what look at what they found off Manly Beach, Manly Cove, with all the pollution in the underwater.
Well, you tell the listener.
Yeah, well, they found straws, plastic straws, hundreds of plastic straws, and they actually found one octopus clutching onto plastic straws that they couldn't take it off them.
Well, it was his straw. You can't steal from marine life.
But there's also the other rubbish.
But I was going to say, that's indicative of the major problem. A little thin straw that you get with a Slurpee or similar device.
One of those funny things, yeah.
And there it is. It's plastic. It does its job. It's got a bendy bit towards the top so you can drink it easier. And a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the invention of paper straws.
Yeah, the first straws were paper.
Suck up. Now, we haven't advanced. The plastic straw isn't an advancement.
Well, the plastic doesn't break down, does it? The paper would eventually break down because it was just covered with a
wax
type stuff. Yeah,
but we're doing it wrong on both ends of the scale because the plastic comes from oil.
This is right, yeah.
So you start with a mistake and you end up with a mistake. We're doing pretty good.
It's just amazing that the recycling of stuff is not going as well as it should do because people just mix up everything that they put stuff that can be recycled with stuff that can't be recycled and so that they toss the lot out because they don't sort out the unrecyclables.
It's the mental attitude that, in fact, people think that, it's plastic. It hasn't cost very much. It's a millionth of a cent to produce. It doesn't have any value, but it has pollution value.
High value for pollution.
And it is, that's right. In some countries in Europe, when in fact you buy a large product in the shop, you are encouraged to unwrap the bloomin' thing there and you leave all the packaging for the supplier
to take
the
away.
Shop. And that's built into the price of the article.
Well, so it should be.
And they put it back into the stream, whereas you and I, if we went to a shop, our contribution might be only small, therefore goes in the general rubbish, doesn't get extracted out. Mm. What you were saying, once it gets into this confused state, it can't be extracted again.
People for a long time have been working on, I guess, recycling and such things, because there's an episode of The Simpsons. Lisa was doing a tour of the Springfield Shopper, which is the local paper, and it says on the front, a percentage of this paper is from recycled items. And Lisa said, what's the percentage? And didn't get an answer. And the tour guide said, well, zero is a percentage.
Well, I found something that they have been able to recycle. On Friday, I had to go and buy a new mop because I have to mop all my house through because it's got hard floors. And
you don't have a cleaning lady.
I don't have a cleaning lady, no.
Well, Sadie passed away.
Yes, so I had to go and buy a new mop. And the previous one I'd had was very heavy and was too hard to wield around. So I went looking for a smaller one. And when I read what it was made from, I was absolutely astounded. The thing was made from recycled green PET bottles and recycled polyester fabric. And they'd mixed it all up and made the mop head out of it.
Well,
we should explain what a PET bottle is, because nowadays when you buy a puppy, they come dehydrated and in a bottle and you just add water.
Add water and the puppy comes out, so that's your PET.
Yes, right. Comes in a PET bottle.
PET presumably is an abbreviation for
polymer something.
It's a lot of big words.
Yeah, but oil-based.
Oh, yes.
Mm.
So we're using oil.
Yes, we're killing our planet. Both ends again.
Oh, golly gosh.
But it's also...
Oh, but the other thing I heard of recently, Gordon...
What's that?
When you're finished with your clothes, you used to be able to take them down the op shop and they would perhaps grab them, or there'd be a rag and bone man who would come along and he would take away your old rags and that would be reused. I'm not going to call recycled because a lot of reusing still ends up eventually with a product that has to be disposed of properly. You can use a plastic item 15 different times, but at the end it's still a lump of plastic.
I'm not sure what they do now, but if you had some clothing which was good enough for the op shops to resell, you'd take it down there. But if you had something that was not resellable, you could give it to the op shop and they would put it all in big bags and stuff and then sell it by weight to the recyclers. And they would make out whatever they would make out of it, cotton waste for cleaning and all that sort of thing.
Cotton waste.
They don't have it in these days. I don't think you can buy cotton waste.
I can remember going to the...
Engineers always had cotton waste to wipe the oil off the thing. Yeah.
Because you can't reuse that terribly many times. Yeah, you've got to clean up. Golly gosh.
What they do now is they give you a plastic bag that you can put your old clothes in and they will sort out the ones that are good enough to sell and the rest of it they recycle somehow.
Now,
I don't know how they do it.
Wouldn't that be good?
But they used to take it to China. All that stuff used to go to China to be recycled, and now China has got so much of this recyclable clothing or fabric that they don't want any more, so they're not taking any of the stuff from Australia.
Fashion industry, of course, is creating items every season, every four seasons of the year, so that I can't wear last year's fashion. Mm. Oh, therefore your fully valuable and usable clothing is just thrown away, even though it's got life left.
Yeah, well, if it's only from one season to another, you probably would be able to get it from an op shop.
I'm virtuous. I have got T-shirts that I still wear from my first trip some 30 years ago to a foreign country.
I wear it.
It doesn't get much use, but it's as a nice sleeping jacket.
Well, when 1992, I think, was the Olympic Games in Barcelona.
Yeah.
I've got a T-shirt that I still wear from that.
It's beautiful. We used to have kids coming in for work experience, and they're typically 15. And, you know, just be in conversation and say, oh, how old are you? Oh, I'm 15. So I've got socks older than you.
Well, I've got the pair of socks I've got on now would be nearly 40 years old.
I don't recall asking that.
That's how good the fabric was in those days. That's how good the socks were in those days.
Oh, you've just got very gentle feet. Or they've been lost in the back of the drawer for 40 years.
They get used every week. They've been used every week.
Talk about feet with socks on.
Yeah.
Here's Guy Sebastian, high on me. Must have been wearing them in his sports shoes. You're on Joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Now, young Phil.
Hello.
Please tell me about daytime TV, or perhaps I shouldn't inquire about it at all. Perhaps I don't want to know about it.
There are some really good bits and then there's the rest. But the really good bits are between 12 and 1 on the Nine Network with the Ellen DeGeneres Show.
Oh. Now, what's that all about?
That's about a show about Ellen DeGeneres.
Talking to other people. I have never seen that show.
They play a lot of games, and based on the success of Game of Thrones, she now has a nighttime show called The Game of Games, where they have the games that they've played on her daytime show, let's say amplified. They'll have people on a raised platform, and they'd answer questions, and if they got a question wrong, their floor disappears and they fall into a black pit of nothingness.
Charming.
And that's...
sounds a bit like Graham Norton's chair that goes
backwards.
Oh, it's a bit
worse than his chair, because you don't just get tilted back, you fall 20 feet.
Oh.
Hopefully onto something padded. The contestants do come out alive, but there's a whole lot of shows, and she has a lot of people will write in. They had a woman this morning who's been waiting 10 years to get tickets to the show. And they always do a bit of research. So they invited her into the show, into the audience, and then refer to her by name and call her down for a chat. And you find out that they're living in debt, or that they can't afford their education or whatever.
Oh.
And they get the scholarships paid and $10,000 cash and all these sort of things. So it's a very uplifting show.
Is that not a reflection upon the US society in one way? That you've got to go around begging for anything and everything?
The Americans don't see it that way. It's supposed to be incentive to get yourself up by your own bootstraps and succeed. And that's only good for the people who do. The rest of the country. Go on.
And I was going to say that so often the politicians seem to be pushing that line, when in fact modern economists are actually saying that the world has got so much wealth now that there should in fact be a standard payment that's made to all residents of the world for general living expenses.
Did you see that there in the Australian papers today or this week was a article about how many billionaires there are in Australia and their combined assets.
It's all out of kilter.
Totally out of kilter. You can only live in one bedroom, one house, a house with
and
a couple
of bedrooms.
And how
can a politician who's a billionaire or a millionaire actually have a feeling for how you, I, or our others
Another interesting letter I saw too was the way they compared our economy with the Canadian economy, our ministers and our parliamentarians with the ministers in Canada. And it was very, very interesting. But Ellen DeGeneres,
we don't have a Justin.
No. But Ellen's having a special day coming up, isn't she?
Well, it's her, what did we say? 60th. I nearly said 80th.
Oh, I thought 60th. We don't talk about ages.
Well, I don't mention ages on here myself. But Ellen's quite upfront with her age.
With her age, yes.
Yeah.
And she's quite proud of the fact that on Australia Day, every year it's her birthday.
Why would she be focusing on that?
Because she gets presents. And they do special shows for her birthday, and they have extra special famous guests.
But what's the Australian link?
She married one.
Oh, yes. How desperate for presents is she then?
Portia de Rossi's from Geelong.
Geelong?
Geelong, yes.
Yeah, that's how they named the road.
Yeah, that's right.
Should have won as a Geelong road. But no, she's a well-known Leswegian.
Oh, she's from
well, both of them, actually.
Yeah, that means she comes from Lesbiana.
No, the Isle of Lesbos.
Oh, right. Not Tasmania.
No, so she's not Taswegian. But she's quite an outspoken supporter of our community.
Oh, God, yes, yes.
And yes. I tell you what, to get into her audience, you've got to be female or gay. There's so few men in her studio audience.
Truly? Oh, I never watched the show. It's just not a good time for me to watch.
Well, you can watch it at 8 o'clock in a rerun the following morning.
Now, Oprah Winfrey, she's one of this crew of daytime TV, isn't she?
Well, she used to be. Then she just started her own network.
All right.
So she doesn't have the Daily Show anymore.
Oh, okay.
But she's a frequent guest and a good friend of Mr. DeGeneres.
Mm. All right.
So they're not competitive.
Now, has she got political ambitions?
She's denied them for decades. She's a very powerful woman. Very wealthy woman, and her speech at
the Emmys.
Was it the Emmys?
The Emmys, yeah.
Well, let's say a recent award show.
yeah.
Was very presidential. Well, but it's sort of spurred from this Me Too campaign and women's rights.
Can I put in something that her speech would be very presidential compared to what they get from their president?
Well, there's nothing presidential, and he's quite proud of the fact that Trump is not presidential, which unfortunately is how he got so many votes from down south.
Yeah, but they were saying that if she did stand for president, she'd get a lot of the African American vote. She'd be very popular with the African Americans. But then,
is that because of her exposure on TV?
I would say so.
Is this only her only reputation?
Because
we've had, or the US people have had, Ronald Reagan,
the great communicator,
film star.
Yeah, I think. See, the presidential Donald race is very different Trump. To our politics. It is a popularity contest.
Right.
So it's, if you didn't want to,
so
imagine
anybody who's unpopular in Australia has got a fair chance of winning the Australian prize.
Well, here you're the leader of the party and you don't get elected by the people, yet we treat our Prime Minister as a president.
Hmm.
We expect him to have all the problems.
Yeah, but
frequently they're the cause of most of them.
Yeah, but the point is the presidential vote is not usually a popular vote because they have to win the college vote.
Oh, it's complicated. Yeah,
unless they win the college vote, like Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by millions of votes, but she didn't win the college.
Yeah, because of the Russians. But that's another story.
It's actually the gerrymandered states that lost it for her.
He was the beaver.
Jerry Mander.
Or Jerry Mathers.
Oh, right.
That would predate most of our audience.
Oh, yeah, sort of, wouldn't it?
So who else is having a birthday round about this time? Well, in Melbourne terms, we've got on the 29th of January, born in 1946, was Ian Molly Meldrum.
Yes, Molly.
Now, there's a TV star that you wouldn't want as a politician. Sorry, Molly. I'll save you the worry of having to be
I could give you
Canberra.
His soundbite for the evening news. But allegedly, and I've actually seen this since his accident.
He doesn't say it anymore.
His stuttering and erring has almost disappeared.
Really? That's good. Quite
not often, recommending falling off ladders after a few drinks.
No, no.
But quite often people have adverse reactions to falling off ladders. Yeah, well, so there you go. Well, good on you then, Molly. That's
happy
excellent.
Birthday to Molly on the 29th. Yes.
25th of January 1952. Peter Tatchell.
Oh, he's a firebrand, isn't he?
Now, he was born in Australia, but he went to the UK, and he's an LGBTI activist of the First Order. He acts up very... Oh, sorry.
He does act up very, very strongly, yes.
He created the ACT UP process.
But he's been a thorn in the side of a lot of politicians, a lot of people that have been anti-gay. He's outed people. He's done all sorts of things that you would normally not get away with, but they seem to just accept him in Britain. So I don't know.
Well, that's good, because their political system is not particularly well balanced either, with the House of Lords being people of no political knowledge. They're just the rich mob.
Yeah, but some of them were, they have been in politics as well, and they go into the, when they retire out of politics, they go into the House of Lords.
I think politicians and politics generally has got a bad rap because there's been in so many duds along the way.
Well, I would like to see most of the Australian politicians get a job first before they go into politics, because there's very few of them have ever had an ordinary job where they've been dealing with the public.
Oh, they've been
sucking
on silver spoons.
Yeah. Well, they go to law school, and then they go to things. They go to unions. And
you heard how the Donald got started, though.
Yeah.
In his own words, I got a small $1 million donation from my father and started a business.
Yeah. And he's,
there's no such thing as a small $1 million anything.
And, of course, his grandfather used to run brothels in California. When they first moved there, yeah. His grandfather was a brothel keeper from Austria.
That's trumped my deck.
You won't get much better than that one.
Well, but better, worse.
Or whatever, yeah. They can't do much worse than that, I think. But then again, you say you ask people, the experts, and they say, well, he's done all the things he promised he would do when he was going to be president.
We haven't got the wall yet.
The wall's the only thing he hasn't done. He's given all his mates a great big tax cut, of course, which has put trillions of dollars out of the business, out of their economy.
But they're a trickle-up economy. They figure if you give business the breaks, then they'll hire the people.
There was a man on the Stephen Colbert show one night, and they were talking about the trickle-down effect, and I don't think I've mentioned this on air before, but he said to Stephen, the chap that he was interviewing, said, look, I'll tell you about trickle-down economics. He said, you drink 26 bottles of water and then wet yourself and put a glass at the bottom of your trousers and see how much water collects in your trousers. He said, that's trickle-down economics.
Yeah.
You get nothing in the glass. He said, you won't get anything in the glass, which I thought was a very good analogy, actually.
Reminds me of a saying. It was a poster on the wall, and it's Charlie Brown, and it's an office joke. He says, doing a good job around here is like peeing in dark trousers. You get a nice warm feeling, but nobody notices.
Well, as Georgia Moroder and Kylie Minogue will say, right here, right now. We'll catch up with you next week.
Yes, we will. Yes.
Bye for now. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.